podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it's the coach home. It's John Gibbons with an FA Cup special in Liverpool. Might have been a little bit disappointing on Saturday night, not quite through to the fourth round yet, but there was loads of really interesting results, loads of fantastic performances and plenty of teams who are looking ahead to a fourth round tie. And we're going to speak to three supporters, three people involved in the football clubs who maybe had a bit of a shock. We shall let them decide. And we start with Blackpool, who had a fantastic 4-0 win. And we got an old friend on air, Tim Fielding, from the Seasiders pod. Tim, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome back to the Anfield Bar.
No problem. Nice to see you.
A great result, has to be said, considering you guys are struggling in the Championship. I'm sure you were hopeful of a decent performance and hopeful of a cup upset, but a 4-0 victory is really quite something.
Yeah, actually, they did nick one back at the end to make it 4-1. But
oh, sorry. Yeah,
incredible performance, really. One that probably none of us really saw coming. As you said, I think we've gone 9 games without winning either side of the World Cup break, and there's a few changes made, a couple of players rested, and things seem to click. Probably the player who's really sort of come into form for us is Ian Pavida, who's on loan from Leeds,
right,
who they've moved him into sort of like the number 10 role, and he's been a revelation since he moved there, and he's really started to make us tick. And to be honest, even though we haven't won the last 2 or 3 games, we'd had some good performances. We were unfortunate at Hull, and where we had a player sent off sort of early part of the second half, which probably prevented us winning. Then we had quite strong performances against Sheffield United and then Sunderland. So we have looked better, and but I think looking at Cooper's face for most of the second half, he looked somewhat shell-shocked. In the way that we finished and they didn't, it was quite a remarkable game, really. Mainly because they had quite a few chances, did Forest, but
right,
were very wasteful in front of goal, and we were the polar opposite. Basically, we scored some quite particularly the third goal was a fantastic finish from CJ Hamilton, and Pavida was just running. They didn't seem to be able to control him at all. So it was a very, very pleasing result. Hopefully something we can take into the league as well, because that's, we want to try and make sure we, having got up to the Championship 2 years ago, that we stay here.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe that confidence can be taken in. It was interesting. I heard a couple of the interviews after the game, and a couple of the players were interviewed on 5 Live. And they were saying, sort of similar to you, really, that they feel like the performances have been decent last few games. You know, they've been a little bit more sort of solid at the back and things like that. I think it's a while since, you know, they've conceded sort of too many goals. But, you know, in front of goal, it sort of hasn't been happening. So for that to click on the big stage, it's great timing, but also hopefully something that they can continue, you know, into, I think it's Watford next.
Yeah, we've got Watford on Saturday. And Watford, I've just actually was reading while I was waiting to come on. They seem to have a few problems of their own. We sort of got the added fillip of Josh Bowler's rejoined us. We had this very surreal scenario where Forrest bought him and then immediately loaned him out to Olympiacos. I think it was, for those who don't know, the Olympiacos owner is the owner of Forrest as well. And obviously Forrest had this very sort of active, shall we say, transfer window. So I don't think Bolo was expecting to spend time in Greece. So he gets farmed out there, doesn't really like it. And one of those quirks is it's not worked out, but the only team he can play for in England is Blackpool, because you can't play for three clubs in
of
one
course,
season.
Yeah.
So he's come back. I don't know how fit he is yet, but we've got him back, and we've just signed Morgan Rodgers from Man City as well on loan for the rest of the season. So we have an abundance of attacking options at the moment. Probably need some defenders to go with it, and we might have a fighting chance of staying up.
In terms of the cup, then it's Southampton next away. Could have been more glamorous, but Southampton is another struggling Premier League team. So you never know. You might be able to do a similar number on them that you did on Nottingham Forest.
We've played Southampton 3 times in the FA Cup away, and every time we've lost. So to say that to slightly, we were, I think people have been watching the TV at 4 o'clock yesterday when Southampton got drawn at home, were shouting, not number 20, which was us. It was one of the ones we didn't want. It's just such a long trek down there. And, yeah. And we would much have preferred either a home tie or a slightly more glamorous away tie, or just something a bit closer to home, anything. It was almost like everything we didn't want, we got. So I suppose it's a first world problem being in the fourth round of the FA Cup, that you're actually worried about who you're playing and being a bit unhappy about it. But we don't tend to do particularly well. We went out to Hartlepool in the third round last year. We've only been, in my time of watching Blackpool, which is sort of 35, 40 years, we've only got to the fifth round twice. Last time against Everton in 2012, and we just put second team out, and which really I found really frustrating when that happens. That was when Holloway was manager. So we sort of gave up before we'd even had a crack at it. So hopefully we're not going to do that. Appleton doesn't seem to be doing that. Michael Appleton, our manager, seems to put a strong side out. He did on Saturday, and I'd expect him to do it at Southampton. So like you say, hopefully we can progress into the fifth round and see where we go from there. Blackpool do, of course, win the FA Cup every time there's a coronation.
Oh, okay.
So the last one was 1953, so you never know. Maybe the runes are down.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Apparently, Liverpool do well when there's a royal wedding. So there we are. So we've got a good record when there's a royal wedding. But the coronation, I didn't have my eye on. So there we go. Just to sort of to start to finish up, I mean, we've had you on in the past, as I said, and a lot of the time, you know, we've been talking to you about off the field stuff rather than, you know, on the field. And I know you were instrumental in terms of the fight against the previous owners and things like that. You know, you've been a board fan, a rep at Blackpool and chair of various organisations and stuff like that, you know. So it must be lovely just to you know, have your club and have a fan base who are able to go to an FA Cup tie and enjoy moments like this, really, because it was a struggle.
Yeah, it was, and we had a really good, rich vein of form after Simon Sadler took over as the owner in 2019. Obviously, and for the Liverpool listeners, obviously Neil Critchley came in as our manager, got us promoted at the first time of asking, albeit a little bit like when you won your league, a bit frustrating because we spent most of the season having to watch it on TV because of COVID. Luckily enough, I was one of the few who managed to get to Wembley, where I think we were allowed 4,000 fans each. So we won that, and we had a good start. I think you have that first year when you go up and you've got the momentum, and we seem to tail off a little bit. Obviously, Critchley jumped ship to join Gerard, which was a very, very disappointing from our perspective about the manner in which it was done and the timing. So we've struggled a bit, you know, and Appleton, to be fair, hasn't had a fair deck of cards for me because the transfer window was a bit chaotic as a result of the timing of when Critchley left. But yeah, it's great as somebody who sort of had stood outside the ground for how many games, leafleting away fans and petitioning the EFL and doing all the things that we did. That we can just go and watch the football and really trust that the club's in good hands. I always knew things were getting better when Blackpool fans started moaning again about what was going on, because that tells you that your football club's back to normal. So we've had a few moans this year because obviously there's been a few moans about recruitment. There's been a few moans about the manager, that he wasn't particularly a popular choice because of his Preston connections, and he had managed us before and jumped ship quite quick. But you know, he's playing quite an expansive game of football, and that's what we like to see. Neil Critchley was a lot more defensive orientated, and it's good to when it clicks like it did on Saturday. It's great to watch, and hopefully with the recruitment that we've got that's coming already, and what hopefully is going to come, we can have a strong second half of the season.
Yeah, when you're moaning about substitutions and squad depth, rather than,
it's not quite like about moaning about owners who are suing your fan base and taking large sums of money out of the football club. So yeah, it's completely different problems and nice problems to have. You know, it means you've got your club back.
Absolutely. Well, I'm delighted you have. Best luck for the rest of the season. That old cliche. But good luck against Southampton as well. Hopefully we'll get back on after you've beaten them. Who knows? But Tom Manton, really nice to speak to you again. And another team at the weekend with an absolutely fantastic result were Wrexham AFC. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom now by the executive director of Wrexham, I think is your official title, Humphrey Kerr. Humphrey, thanks so much for coming on the Anfield Wrap. I'm so pleased you've been able to join us.
So, thank you for having me. It's a great honour.
So tell us about the weekend then. I mean, it's been a roller coaster. I've honestly done so many cliches in this show so far. It is untrue, but it is fair to say the whole Wrexham experience for you guys and the team who took over has been a roller coaster, but really summed up by the 4-3 victory at the weekend.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, it's since we've come in, we've been really lucky and enjoyed some mad games. We had a 7-5 earlier in the season at home against Barnet. We had a 6-5 last season at home against Dover. Obviously, we were on the wrong end of a 5-4 last year as well in the playoff semi-final. But it was really exciting. As a club that has so much history in the Cup and, you know, so many of our kind of greatest achievements have been those giant killings and bloodying the noses of teams further up the leagues. That was something that we missed out on last year. Our FA Cup journey ended away at Harrogate Town and, you know, a fixture that sort of, with all the greatest respect to Harrogate Town, didn't really fire the imagination of our fans, and it was all so league focused last year, and we're very focused on the league this year. But to have like a sort of famous FA Cup victory was something that, you know, we had on our vision board, if you will. But I think we went to the game yesterday or day before yesterday expecting, you know, probably to fight valiantly but get beaten by Coventry, so then go 4-1 up. They have a man sent off. Then you know, they throw caution to the wind and produce, you know, an all-time classic. Was something very, very exciting to be part of.
I mean, you talked there about the vision board, and one of the things that comes across in the documentary is the idea of bringing pride back to the football club, but also to Wrexham itself, and that's what stuff like this does, doesn't it? It gets everyone talking, it gets the attention, but also I imagine Wrexham is the place is absolutely buzzing still today.
And that's what
football can do, and that's what you guys have helped do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's one of the things that, I don't know if you saw the documentary, but there's a moment at the end of the first season where, you know, after we have that crushing disappointment of losing the semi-final, the guys went into the dressing room and just told the players, and it was completely true that, yes, obviously you want to get promoted, we want to do all those things, but in a way, the day-to-day of what they are doing for the town is so enormous, because it's just putting a smile back on people's faces at a time when, you know, those are in precious short supply. In a game like yesterday, it's just perfect. You know, gives everybody a chance to, you know, give it the big one to the Coventry fans, who, to be, Coventry was so gracious and welcoming and good to us, you know, all the way through. And, you know, I sat in the, with the prawn sandwich brigade up in the boardroom, and they couldn't have been nicer. But it was, you know, it was reflective of, you know, I think a lot of people look at us, lots of people in our division don't look at us quite the same way, but outside our division look at us and go like, well, you know, they deserve a break. They've had a tough time for a long time. And why not? Like, why not have, you know, something nice happen for once to a football club? Feels like we hear so many horror stories. It's good to have one that's positive.
Absolutely. How, you know, you mentioned you were there, you know, you were there watching. The owners weren't about. I don't know if it's your job to sort of keep them updated. I gather, it's become a news story that Rob's feed went with the
yes,
stuff like that. And so were you having to sort of update them on what was going on and every goal and every minute?
Yeah, so we have a kind of group text thread on Saturday was mostly just a series of like, what WTF, what's happening? Oh my God, we're up. Like, what's going on? They FaceTimed in, right basically on the final whistle. I couldn't hear a word, you know, it becomes an impossible communication tool. They can just see me and then people behind me, all the Wrexham traveling party, all our officials and things, everyone losing our minds and, you know, flip the camera around and show them the fans and things. But yeah, I think the challenge with our games when they get shown in the States is that, you know, ESPN's on quite a tight schedule and they're just not used to having uncertain finish times. So they're like, well, I don't know if this is what happened, but my guess is that probably they were like, well, hang on, it's gone. It's 9 a.m. now. We were told this thing would be over by now. We're going to switch to, ladies lacrosse or whatever it was they had scheduled in for directly afterwards. Nothing beats being there in person, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it must be sort of a slightly strange one for you, because you have to sort of temper expectations going into this. I mean, I know that the fellas are massively passionate about football now and are increasing their knowledge.
Yeah.
But presumably you're going into the game, you're having to say, well, look, we'll probably lose this one, and then they go and win. And it sort of doesn't help in a way.
No, completely. My reputation as a football sage keeps being undone by this team, because I keep being like, look, we can't, you know, we're not going to win every game at home this season. Then we just keep winning every game at home, or, you know, whatever, every kind of very English negative, cold water I pour on their very American enthusiasm. So far, the boys have surpassed it. Yesterday, as I said, we all knew it was like, this is a free hit. The league is the main thing for us. Let's just go and enjoy ourselves. It's also the first time in about 2 years we've played a game where we haven't been favourites in a way. I mean, you have those games where we're away at one of the other, you know, big teams in the National League, and we're not necessarily favourites, but our fans are still sort of hoping and expecting that we're going to get a win. And this is one where we really thought, okay, we'll go there and, you know, we'd probably lose 2-0 or 2-1 or something. Like, let's just give a good account of ourselves, and we just don't want to get given a battering. And then, you know, we lived up to the promise of you know, what the best of what we can do, because we went out and we did get a bunch of players from League One and League Two. It's not a standard non-league side this by any means, which is the case for sort of three or four teams in the National League now. They are really League Two / League One teams. Temporarily embarrassed league teams is how I describe us.
Good. I mean, it is such a tough league to get out, and that's what really came across, you know, in the documentary. And tough fight this time. It in a way is a little bit mad that there's not more teams going up and down, but the situation is the situation. And, you know, you're in another tough fight this year. I think it's
we sure are. Yeah, I mean, we are breaking records almost every week for unbeaten runs and most goals scored at home and points, most points in the calendar year, all this kind of thing. Annoyingly, so in Notts County. I saw a graphic
as well. They're such a big club.
I mean, another. I mean, very storied, very impressive, respectable, well run, well organized. They play great football. You know, they're a great rival to have, because they are a properly good side. You know, as are Chesterfield, as are Woking. It's just that I saw a graphic a few weeks ago that was kind of most points per game in the top five divisions in the top five FIFA coefficient leagues in Europe this season or whatever. And it was sort of Arsenal, Napoli, Notts County, Wrexham, and I can't remember, PSG or someone like that. I mean, it's extraordinary company to keep. There's just a sort of brutal irony for us they happen to be in the same division as us. Like, can you, in the nicest possible way, naff off? very respectfully, and with the correct sporting ideals.
It's the Liverpool Man City of the National League.
Well, that's, I mean, I think we will both finish over 100 points this season. Wow. It's just going to be who gets 105 and who gets 102.
Well, I mean, it's going to be worth following then. I mean, we talked about the documentary a couple of times. Is there going to be another season that people are going to be able to...
Yes, the documentary crew were there at the CBS Arena, as it's now called, on Saturday. And sure, they got their fill of good stuff there. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, we're hoping the documentary will continue on, you know, indefinitely. I mean, they've ordered one more series so far, but we know the first one was a big success. And you know, our hope is that this second year will have a whole fresh kind of vibe to it, because it's the year that we go up. The hope is that it will be a thing that people can stick with for a few years. And we've seen a huge increase in the number of people overseas that are watching our games when they get streamed. That are, you know, Wrexham's game, all our FA Cup games have been screened in the US this year, which is mad. Wrexham was trending number one in the US yesterday afternoon, which is, you know, normally reserved for Liverpool or Manchester City or, you know, Prince Harry at the moment or whatever it is. We'll take that. That's great for us, because, you know, in the future, my dream is to play, you know, a league fixture at Anfield. Like, that is something that I hold very, very close to my heart. And you know, in order to do that, we need to increase the number of people that are watching and following and caring. And, you know, we've got a huge advantage there over some of the other clubs that have kind of done what we are doing, if that makes sense, you know, Salford or Forest Green Rovers or whatever it may be. We've got this huge, you know, semi-dormant fan base that is waking up. You know, we used to have 35,000 a week at the race course, like every week, every match. And, you know, we don't have the capacity for that now, obviously, with seating and standing and all the rules about that. We can't fit that many in, but we're expanding the stadium. We know we'll fill it when it's expanded. And we want to keep doing that right the way up to the top table.
You mentioned it's been so much more interest in terms of streaming and stuff like that, but it's not just that. Gallery, it's people turn up to the Turf Pub because they want a pint in there.
Oh, yeah.
It's become, you know, a destination, which is amazing for Wrexham itself.
Absolutely. I mean, and when I, you know, when I'm in the UK, I mean, I'm currently in the US, but when I'm in the UK, which I am for about half 6 months of the year, and I go to games or I'm in the car park at the race course or at away games, now I'm so often hearing, you know, American accents, Canadian accents. There are people that have traveled over just to come to the game. I went to our away game at Boreham Wood earlier in the season and was sort of hovering around the team bus having a cigarette, as is my want after matches, to sort of stay well done to everybody and talk to Phil, the manager, and things. And you know, there were five or six people there who were some from Texas, one from Toronto, that had come in. They're just like, you know what, I've always wanted to come to the UK. I've never quite had a sort of a real good reason. This is the reason we've picked. So it's been extraordinary. Long may it continue indeed.
There's a home tie against Sheffield United now that is the award, and that's going to be a huge event, isn't it? It's going to be a big deal. I'm sure it'll be a sellout. I'm sure everyone's, you know, messaging about how to get tickets and stuff like that. It's going to be massive. And there's maybe an opportunity there because Sheffield United are a good team and going well. But, you know, I'm sure you'll fancy it with that home record you've got this season.
Well, I think, listen, they are a fantastic team, and I think they're almost certainly destined to go back into the Premier League next year. And deservedly so. And, you know, I suppose for us, it's a really exciting chance to match ourselves against a great team. We felt that on Saturday. And, you know, Coventry put out a pretty strong team. They made a couple of changes, but we actually also did as well, because, as I say, we're so worried about the league that we've got a game on Tuesday. So the feeling was, let's not go full bore, just in case. And they made about the same level of changes we did. And, you know, we pulled off a great result. So, you know, I know that particularly, you know, Paul Mullen, who is a diehard Liverpool fan, he wants to get his name into the hat for the next round, just in case that we get that plum tie at Anfield of the race course. I'm desperate for that as well, because, you know, I'm doing double duty here. I've got my Wrexham GA on and my Jurgen Klopp mug, revealing my dual loyalties. But, you know, that game, I have to be here for the next, annoyingly, for Sheffield United game. I'm going to be stuck in America, but I will be back in town for the fifth round. So, you know, a boy can dream.
Well, that's all. I hope so, because if Liverpool are getting in the fifth round, then we've done something right, because there's at least two tough games sort of, you know, for us.
Yes.
You know, before then. So let's all sort of hope that happens. You mentioned Paul Mullen there, and it is, you know, nice for us to watch the series to see a sort of scout. So he comes across really well. Romance between him and Ryan Reynolds is a funny thing that I don't think he would have saw coming in his life. I don't know if you've told Ryan that he's not meant to have favourites, by the way, as the owner, you're not meant to have favourites, but it seems like he's very much smitten with a striker from Litherland.
Well, yeah, I mean, we do our best to say, look, you've got to spread the love around. But the problem is that you know, Paul will keep on scoring lots of goals, him and Ollie Palmer. And so naturally, you know how it is, every football club, the strikers often get the, you know, they get the love, you know, whether it's Mo Salah or Fernando Torres or whoever it may be, they are the ones that people tend to gravitate towards. But there's, you know, it's such a strong group we've got and such a great kind of dressing room. They're, you know, every time I'm in the race course ground, there's a lot of laughter and a lot of fun is being had. And you get a sense that these are people that are enjoying their football and enjoying their lives. And that's really catching. You know, it's very, very, very affecting. And I know that Rob and Ryan love being there. They love being around the players. The funny thing that all three of us have really is coming into this world at a very late stage. And being, you know, me being a football fan my whole life and them being sports fans and more recently football fans, is we're finding it very difficult to be sort of cool around the players. We get a bit too excited still that these are the guys that are doing it for us. And it does make me laugh that both Rob and Ryan get quite giddy. I mean, I still at times, you know, if we've had a great game or someone scored an absolute belter, I can't do anything other than be like, oh my God, that was amazing. And then you dribble around and then you stuck in the top corner. That was so cool. And I'm like, God, you're like 11 years old again. You're not like 10 years older than all these guys. I'm getting much too excited. But yeah, there's a major league bromance, I think, between especially our top two and Rob and Ryan. Fantastic. They just love them. Yeah.
Just to finish up, then, I do really appreciate your time. You know, you've gone from commentary back to sort of America in a couple of days, and I know it's very early there. But how much are you enjoying it? Maybe because you said there that you know you're a football fan. You're obviously a Liverpool fan, but you know, Wrexham's a massive part of your heart now. But
yeah,
I would hazard a guess that 4 or 5 years ago you didn't think you'd be executive director of a football club, but it sort of has happened. And, you know, you're an actor and writer and comedian, and that's your sort of background and what you were doing, and then suddenly been sort of thrust into this. So how much are you enjoying it?
I love it. I mean, there are moments, of course, like everything, where you are like, oh my God, like what? How on earth did I manage to wangle my way into this, and now I've got this to deal with. But in the main, I mean, it's just so exciting. And the, you know, the thing I'll say that it sounds a bit twee, but it's totally true, is that, as I say, I'm always hovering in the car park, having a cigarette before at the game and at halftime and afterwards, and especially the race course. I sort of like doing that in the car park because it gives me a chance to talk to lots of fans and have them bring things up to me that they, you know, don't have a better way of finding someone at the club to talk to about if they've got an issue with something that they've encountered. But so often what happens is people come up to me and they'll say, you know, I came to my first game in 1963 and I used to come with my dad and, you know, he passed away. And I then came I met my husband here and we used to come all together. And then he died in the 90s. And, you know, I couldn't come anymore because I was watching the team that I love, you know, circle the drain because that's what we were doing. You know, the club dropped slowly from the league and it was owned and operated by the fans who did an amazing job, but just didn't have the resources in modern football to keep the club going in the right direction. And, you know, sometimes people come to me and say, you know, I hadn't been for 15, 20 years. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But my nephew or my son or somebody told me I should get a season ticket this year. And I've been coming again and it's reignited my love. And, you know, people kind of, we have a bit of a hug and sometimes there's a few tears and things. And you just go, this is far and away the most important thing I've ever been part of in my life. I mean, I love my other job. I love my day job. It's really fun. I have a really good time, but it's not important. I pretend to be a lawyer on telly for money. it's great. I love it. And I love my colleagues and I have a really good time there, but it doesn't, you know, nobody is coming up to me and being like, you've saved something that means so much to me. And that is, you know, I can't believe that I get to do that. That's just such an unbelievable honor. So yes, occasionally it's tough, but in the main it's the best thing I've ever been involved with, and I long may it continue.
Well, good on Ollius. You can't help watch the documentary and not be delighted for the people who've given their lives and so much of themselves to their football clubs. And listen, football clubs give us a lot back, but some more than others. And I think it is fair to say that the relationship between Wrexham fans and the club was a bit of a sort of a one-way one. But, you know, you have given those people so much pride and so much to look forward to. And now a fourth-round FA Cup tie against Sheffield United as well. So best of luck in that tie. I hope you guys get through. And yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll be getting you on the pre-match warm-up to preview a fifth-round tie. That'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Oh, that'd be a dream.
Tom Adamfree, really appreciate your time.
Lovely. Cheers, John. Thanks very much. Take care.
And of course, we had to cover Stevenage. What a story. They're a famous FA Cup side now. Lots of giant killings over the years, but another wonderful afternoon in Stevenage's history. And people might have seen, whatever, a little bit viral there, the reaction and the commentary from the team from BBC Three Counties Radio. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by the co-commentator yesterday, Dean Thompson. Dean, welcome to the Anfield Wrap. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. Absolute pleasure.
It sounded like some afternoon. It felt like some afternoon. I did the joys of listening to you guys going crazy, sort of watching it. You know, talk us through the whole thing, because, you know, I saw a little interview that you did for social media early in the day, and you were like making a few jokes saying, oh yeah, it's going to be easy, straightforward and stuff. I'm sure you didn't actually believe it, but they did it. Stevenage did it again.
Yeah, we didn't believe it, and that's how we roll, me and Steve. We're not the usual kind of BBC commentators. We like to do our commentaries more as a conversation, and you know, Steve's the lead. He has to remember all the players' names. I just chip in a little bit, you know. I do the easy bit. It's been an incredible 11 months with Steve Evans. So you can't write him off. You can't write his side off. But this is Stevenage. Yeah, we're second in League Two. We're going to Aston Villa, yeah, for goodness sake. We can't win that, you know. So you just try and have a good day until it gets to kickoff time. And then you're like, right, it's back to the wall now. Let's get into the business. You know, Stevenage have come a long way from their non-league days. I first went to Stevenage in about 86, Division Two North of the Vauxhall Opal League. So I've grown up with Stevenage, and It was a tough one. I mean, yeah, Villa made changes, but you knew their names. You knew the names of those players, didn't you, in that side? And you just, the possession, what was it, 79-80% to Villa. But in commentary, we said, they're just moving the ball from right back to centre-back to centre-back to left-back, and they're knocking it into the centre circle. It's coming back again. And Stevenage are used to that a bit in League Two, but they press high. Norris and Rose usually press a little bit quicker and a little bit faster. So Stevenage kind of sat back and let Villa have that. And maybe they were just hoping that they were going to pass themselves out, you know, and then we take it. And I said to Steve on about 76, 77 minutes, I just had a feeling that something was happening in the game, and the tide, the changes had sort of split the balance a little bit. And I just felt that something was going to happen. And I'm claiming an assist.
Oh, why not? I mean, these games throw up heroes as well, and sometimes, you know, unlikely. And for Dean Campbell coming off the bench and scoring a winner like that, you know, he just looked delighted. And every interview I saw afterwards, he's beaming. You know, he'd had his moment, and it's a moment you dream of. And the cliches are right. When we're in the backyard or in the back garden as a kid, you dream about scoring the winning goal in the FA Cup, and he's done that now.
And what a lovely guy. He's been in and out of the side, and he's been more out than in the last sort of 2 months. But a lovely lad, really a lovely pleasure to speak to him. He's so polite, and, you know, his family were there yesterday, and he's been so patient. And, you know, when you're on a loan move from a big side, you could easily say, well, I want to go elsewhere. I want to get games under my belt and maybe drop down another level. So, fair play to the lad. He's come on and he's done his business. And he's done it every time he's come on, to be fair. He comes in and he'll leave a hold, or he'll get himself forward. He's a real versatile midfielder. So we like him, but he's got a job on his hands to get in ahead of Alex Gilby and Jake Reeves and Jordan Roberts, which is that favoured midfield three. But fair play to him. He's done his business yesterday.
The celebrations after the game must have been something else. I mean, you know, I saw, you know, again on your social media, you know, doing lots of interviews. We've all seen pictures from the dressing room, and it is such a moment for a squad that seems so together.
Yeah, they are. And that's the biggest thing about this squad of players. A lot was spoken in July and August about Stevenage having a really small squad, 21 players. Match day one, Elliot List gets injured, out for pretty much the rest of the season. We might see him in March or April. 20 players. And the gaffer didn't want to sign anyone else. No, we'll be all right with 20. Yeah, there have been days where we've had benches of four outfield players, but that seems to galvanise these boys. And, you know, talking to those players and having conversations with them, they love each other. And that can't have been said for the Stevenage dressing room in the last two or three seasons. That, you know, we had big squads and lots of factions in that dressing room. But these guys... I keep forcing one of them to say something bad about another one, you know, just in an off the cuff comment. They won't bite. And I don't think that they need to bite, because I do honestly think that those 20 guys all just like each other and love being in each other's company and love playing football together.
The manager has divided opinion over the years. I think it's fair to say he's a big character. He's very sort of Marmite in terms of how players have dealt with him, but you cannot argue with the job he's done at Stevenage. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I've said this to people over the last few weeks. I don't think there's a massive tactical masterclass going on at the training ground with Steve and Paul Rayner and Alex Ravel. They know their strengths. They don't, you know, there's nothing too technical going on. There's no flip charts on the side of the pitch. You know, you're not, know your job. Yeah, know your job when you go over that white line, because we'll work hard in the week. We'll tell you everything that you need to know. And you go off and you do it. That's how he operates. And look, when you say it divides opinion in football, Steve Evans, he divided opinion within the football club when he arrived. There were so many fans going, I'm never coming back. We're not going to watch it. But Stevenage had a bit of history with Steve from non-league when he was manager of Boston, and we were fighting for that title, and, you know, all sorts of shenanigans were going on. And of course, we've met him back in the day. We had Graham Wesley, who as another divisive manager and, you know, none too popular outside of Stevenage. And him and Steve Evans had some good battles over the years. So we've known that there's a problem, you know, there's a problem within football for him. So we just know that he's ours now, and we've got to look after him.
How does yesterday rank for you then in terms of sort of days at work? You know, we're going to resume now. This is one of the shirts behind you.
Well, I thought, you know, there was a great tweet yesterday that went viral, shall we say. And it was something about a certain ex-Barcelona player in Luther James Wilding's back pocket. So there is Luther's shirt up on my wall, signed by him. We were his sponsors last season. So, that's Luther's shirt, and what a season he's having at right wing back as well. It's just, you know, it's been incredible. And I've said so many words about it in the last 20 hours that I'm not sure how many more I've got left, you know. But I think I said to you before we started to chat was, 12 years ago to the day, Stevenage beat Newcastle. That was a Graham Wesley side that won that game. And Michael Boswick was a goal scorer that day, 12 years ago. Michael Boswick came on yesterday for Stevenage in the dying moments to make a substitute appearance. That was an excellent day. We've been to Tottenham. We held Spurs at home. We went to the Lane. We lost 2-1. Of course, we famously held Newcastle back in the day to a draw and went back up there. But when you go to a Premier League side and you beat them in their own backyard, I don't think that anything's going to top that.
I guess the question now is, can they do it on a cold, windy afternoon in Stoke, which is the next one? Not quite maybe the glamour tie that everyone was hoping for. Well, the draw was before the game, wasn't it?
So, we knew the bad news before the game. Listen, we... In 2002, we played the FA Trophy final at Villa Park and we lost to Yeovil 2-0. So we righted that wrong yesterday. The last wrong to be righted for Stevenage Football Club is we went to the Britannia in a playoff final and lost to Carlisle. Hey. Let's put that one right and go and win at Stoke, shall we?
And just finally, you know, you mentioned before second in League Two going really well. I don't know if Stevenage have ever been in the third tier. You'll be able to tell me, but it's a real opportunity. It's a real possibility this season.
Yeah. When I came into the Football League, I had one season in League Two. We were 17th at this time of the year and went all the way through to the playoffs. Won the playoffs against Torquay at Old Trafford and got into the playoffs the following season in League One and lost to Sheffield United. And since then, it's sort of been a little bit downhill. But it's a tough League One, isn't it? You look at the likes of Forest Green and Cambridge that have gone into that league and they struggled to get out of the bottom 8-10. I'm never going to ever again doubt Steve Evans and the players that he brings in. And, you know, I'm almost worried on Saturday to go to Harrogate and, you know, after the Lord Mayor's show and all of that, when you have a brilliant win one week and then you go lose the next. But I'm saying to myself, no, this bunch of players is different. You know, they're going to go Harrogate and they're going to be on it. Don't you worry about that. And let's face it, if you know you're going into a hairdryer from Steve Evans, you do your best out there for 45 minutes. You don't want one of them half-time hairdryers, that's for sure.
Absolutely. But before all that, it is Stoke City and it is maybe another FA Cup giant killing. Who knows? But in the meantime, huge thanks to Dino. He is at DinoS13 on Twitter. I would encourage you to check out everything he put out on yesterday. It was wonderful. Flicking through the tweets and going on the journey. You did a great storytelling job, first of all. So as a journalist, so sort of congratulations, you know, from the very start of the day, from the morning, sort of all the way through, you took everyone with you and yeah, you both did a fantastic job. So congratulations, but also thanks so much for coming on today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you. Sports Social Podcast Network.